Imagine reaching everything you've worked so hard for, a law career, security, prestige, only to find yourself thinking, is this really it for me? Well, our guest today refused to settle for comfort or convenience. Instead, she left a safe path behind to create a life driven by purpose and passion. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show for today's leaders who want to get ahead and stay ahead of the game. And we know to do so, great leaders aren't born or made. They are constantly in the making. I'm your host, Damon Lemby. I'm a two-time best-selling author and the CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has helped upskill over 2 million people over the past 3 decades. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Alicia Jessup, an attorney, professor, and founder of Ruling Sports, a platform dedicated to empowering athletes beyond their playing careers. With the expertise in sports law and journalism, she's covered top events like the Super Bowl and NBA Finals, plus many more, gaining unique insights into resilience and success. At Pepperdine University, Alicia teaches sports law, sponsorship, and finance. Alicia is inspired to help the next generation of leaders, especially women, be passionate and push past conventional success and help others create purpose-driven lives. In our conversation, I'm going to ask Alicia to share why she believes that true growth only happens when you step out of your comfort zone. The power of storytelling, championing women in sports, and LeBron James. Whether you love or hate him on the court, you're not going to want to miss this heartwarming story about him. So without further ado, let's jump into this great conversation with Alicia. So I know that one of your favorite quotes is, "And then the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was greater than the risk it took to blossom." Why is that important to you?
It's been a driver of my life. So I graduated law school amidst the Great Recession. So I graduated in 2009. And at that point in my life, I'd been pursuing education for 20 years to achieve my dreams. I wanted to work in sports and entertainment law. I'm a first generation college student who had no built-in network or pathway directly to success. So I'm truly self-made and self-built. And I found myself working at a law firm in 2009 with really nice people, brilliant people. I was living in Orange County off of the Pacific Coast Highway. I was going to events in Hollywood, but I was dying a slow death because I wasn't pursuing the purpose and passion that I knew were meant for my life. I think a lot of people get comfortable with where they are in life. I was paying my bills. I was saving money. There were people who were fighting for a job, but I couldn't accept that this was it for me. And so I took that risk to jump off into the deep end, if you will, and make a career decision in pursuing sport media that at the time, a lot of my colleagues in the firm were like, what are you doing? You're about to be put on the partner track. They're going to move you to San Francisco. They're going to promote you. And I quit. I left the job. I took at that time a 35% pay cut amidst an economic crisis and uncertainty. But I knew the bigger risk was to stay put and not follow my dreams.
We're going to get into a minute about sports and everything, you know, something I'm obviously very passionate about. But one of the things you said right there was, you know, you were comfortable and things were going okay. And I see a lot of people, and I've even been there myself. What advice do you have for people to learn how to get out of their comfort zone? Because so many people are just stuck being comfortable and you just don't get those opportunities to learn or grow if you just stay there.
Sure. So first of all, like, comfort is a gift, right? Like, I'm an American and now I lived a pretty privileged life as an educated person where I consistently have a roof over my head and food in my refrigerator. So in that sense, comfort is a gift. But I believe that every human on earth has unique gifts, talents, and abilities, that one of our purposes on this planet is to burn out the candle, if you will, on those purposes, talents, and abilities. And to, by the time you meet your death, hopefully it's later rather than sooner, you can say to whoever your maker is, I did everything that you entrusted me with. And so I think sometimes Americans have the wrong definition of success, where a lot of times what that definition entails is, am I comfortable? Do I have that roof over my head? Do I have that food in my refrigerator? Are my kids okay? And those are all valuable metrics. Those are all important things, but you need to add something to it. Am I doing everything I know that I'm capable of? am I also fully utilizing all the gifts that have been entrusted to me? And so when I did that analysis for myself, I realized I had gotten too comfortable and I had begun playing too safe, and that there were other callings and purposes on my life that I needed to go follow.
So you're saying that, you know, Americans, they have this, you know, definition of success, you know, and I agree with you that. How do you define success?
Success for me is if at the end of every day or the end of every year, I can look back and say I grew as a person. So I put myself in uncomfortable situations where I was forced to learn or step out of this proverbial comfort zone, go to places that I didn't know, and engage with people that I hadn't engaged with. So to me, success is just the continual determination to lead and to advance yourself in this life. So I guess to me, the definition of success is the antithesis of comfort. And I think my friends and those who know me well would say that I'm doing a pretty good job of that, because at 40 years old, my life looks a lot different than a lot of similarly situated people. I'm not married. I don't have children. I don't own a home. And I believe I could have those things. But there's other things that I've been pursuing because I believe they're more true to my personal calling, which isn't everybody's.
I think that's great. And I also, I look at your body of work and you've done so many different things, you know, from being an attorney to being at Pepperdine to now founding your own media platform. And it all kind of ties back into sports, really, if you think about it. So what motivates you, or what gets you so pumped up or excited about sports?
What I love the most about sports is you have a subject where everyone who is an actor or player in that subject or in that field is committed to the utmost greatness. You do not become a high-level athlete without waking up every day and committing to be the best that you can be. Now, as we're probably going to go into, I've covered a lot of athletes and I've spent a lot of time in locker rooms. And there's always that outlier. I'm not going to name this person, but there's one NBA athlete that I covered who had a really long career. And as truth would have it, he hated basketball. Like, this man absolutely hated basketball. He was just gifted with natural ability. He's the outlier. Most people who make it to the highest level of sport are people who wake up every single day committed to one thing, and that one thing is being great. And so as someone who aspires to do the same, what I love the most about sport is I have in front of me hundreds, if not thousands, of role models for what I strive to be as a human. But also, I love the story of the underdog. I love the story of people who are overcoming obstacles and who are not going to let those obstacles get in the way of what they want from life.
And that's an interesting story about the NBA basketball player who hated playing basketball, because, you know, typically you got to be pretty passionate and dedicated to be able to get to that level of success. Because what I've seen is a lot of people, whether it's in baseball or other sports, who have the natural talent and ability, but they're miserable or they hated doing it. And they were never able to rise to the level of being in the NBA. I mean, it's so incredibly difficult to get to the NBA or get to Major League Baseball or, you know, women's soccer professionally, any of that kind of stuff. So tough. So it's interesting. Yeah. And right. And what a awesome it is for you to be able to have all those role models.
And I think the best thing, the role model, about a week ago from when we're recording this, I had the unique opportunity to fly to Boston and sit down with David Ortiz, so Big Poppy, a multiple World Series champion winner, and Drew Holiday, who's won 2 national championships in the NBA and also a gold medalist in the Olympics. And I said, what's the key to your success? You both are repeat champions. What's been the key to your success? And they both had the same answer. And the answer was discipline. So to your point, you can have all the gifts bestowed on you. You could have this natural, unique athletic talent. But if you don't have the discipline to wake up every day and prime that talent and optimize it, it's a wasted talent. And so I think that's also been a through line in my life where I've been blessed. I've been blessed with gifts of being able to storytell, to write, to speak. And every single day I have to hone that craft and work on getting better.
What percentage of your time right now are you spending interviewing, doing journalistic work?
Great question. The answer is it depends. You know, I do have a full-time job as a tenured professor at Pepperdine University. So the journalistic work is more of a passion project and a side hustle, if you will. I wouldn't call it that, but it's hard to break it down as a hard percentage. It's something that flows into my everyday existence and what I'm doing overarchingly.
And I was asking about that because you're a journalist, you're a teacher, and we have a lot of leaders on our as listeners. And one thing that I think is probably pretty true is you have journalists and you have teachers, and they tend to have the ability to get people to open up and be vulnerable and share with them stuff about their life or what's going on that maybe others aren't capable of doing. And that's something that I think is really important for business leaders to be able to connect and get their people to feel comfortable enough and trust them enough to be able to share. Do you have any tips or advice for leaders who can get better at doing what you're able to do?
I think the best advice I can give to get people to open up is to listen. And it's a delicate balance because what I believe best trained me to be a good interviewer was law school. So in law school, you learn how to prepare and present an argument. You learn how to ask questions in a directed way to get to the answer you want. So in that sense, you have an agenda when you're asking these questions, but you have to be open to how that agenda unfolds so that the person on the other side of the questions can tell you what they need to say. And sometimes in that process, you might unearth or unpack even more information or wonderful insights than you could have planned for. So I think one of the most important skills to learn is listening. And that's something that I think, and others would say, I'm very good at. And if you do that, and you value what the person's saying without interjecting, without presupposing, it's amazing to watch it unfold, but people start opening up to you and telling you more than you ever could have wanted or imagined, honestly, because our world isn't set up to listen. You know, think about social media. We have so many talking heads gabbing a mile a minute. There's not that other side, which is pure silence and listening and openness to whatever you're going to tell me. So that's something that's really helped me. And, you know, I think just being credible with your word and being someone that demonstrates that you care about other people and that you're not the gotcha or I'm out to get you person, that's also helped me as a journalist because the sources I've been able to engage with know that I'm not going to do them dirty and I'm going to do them right. And so they're going to open up.
And as I'm sitting here listening to you, one of the things that you said was the ability to listen and not like interject while somebody's speaking. And you could, that happens with employees, with, you know, a leader talking to employees. I also see that a lot in coaching our sales team and other sales professionals where you get in a situation for all you sales professionals out there. You get in a situation where you ask a question and a prospect or a customer says, yeah, we need this or that. And they give you an answer and you jump right in to solve that, Alicia. And by doing that, you know what you miss out on? All the gold that could come afterwards.
Right. So I teach a method of selling called benefit selling, which utilizes open-ended questions. And to ask open-ended questions effectively, at the end of the open-ended question, you need to pause and really listen. And you can't in your head be thinking about the next question when the person you ask the question to is responding. You literally have to pause, shut down your mind, quiet it, and hear what this person's saying, and then move on to the next question using the gems that they laid into their response to facilitate what you're going to say next. And that takes practice. It takes skill because it goes against a lot of what we're taught in school and in life.
It really is. It is hard. You know, it's hard to, because you just want to jump in. Sometimes you just want to jump in and help. Before we move on to another question I have around journalism and stuff like that, can you please give me a good story about an interview going off track?
Yes. So in 2019, I had the opportunity to spend an afternoon with Mike Tyson in his podcast studio.
And really?
Yes. Yeah. And so I was writing for The Athletic at the time, and Mike was, I believe at the time, like announcing some like cannabis resort that he planned on building, but then COVID happened. And, you know, like I was born in the 80s. I'm obviously a woman. I'm an only child. Right. Mike was charged with rape when I was a kid. And so my father was not very happy that I was going alone to do this interview with the former heavyweight world champion who had that history. So I get to the interview, and it was the first and probably only time in my life that the subject was smoking a joint when I sat with him for the interview.
Tyson was?
Oh yeah, Mike Tyson was smoking a joint. And I start working through the questions, and I'm doing what I just explained. I'm trying to be open and ask open-ended questions and listening. And at this point, I'd been a journalist for close to a decade. I'd interviewed LeBron. I'd been credentialed for the Super Bowl. I was very comfortable, and I could get people to say what I needed them to say. This guy was giving me nothing. It was so hard where we're like an hour into the thing, and I'm like, I don't have a story here. Like, this is going to be a problem. And this is a good example of the importance of relationships and being a good person to sometimes get the outcome that you need. So I sat back and I realized, like, this man doesn't trust me. And why should he? I'm a perfect stranger. He doesn't know me from Adam. He's been burned his entire life. But the week before, I had been at a movie premiere for Meta World Peace's documentary on Showtime. And Meta had invited a group of friends, and Mike was sitting in front of me at that premiere. So I said, hey, you were at Meta's movie premiere last week. And he knew that to be at that premiere, you had to be a friend of Meta's. And so he said, you're friends with Meta? I go, yeah. And he goes, okay, ask me whatever you want. And it is an amazing interview to listen to, because his whole persona changes, where by the end of it, he was talking to me about killing his ego and all of the troubles he had to face and how he overcame them. And he's like, you're cool. Let's go get dinner with Meta sometime. So, you know, I think trust is one of the most critical things you have. Not one of. Trust is the most critical thing you have to establish if you want people to open up vulnerably to you.
That's amazing. What's the name of that interview? I want to put it in the show notes.
Well, it's a story I did in The Athletic. So if you Google Alicia Jessup, Mike Tyson, The Athletic, it should come up. But it's an incredible story. It ended up becoming just one of my favorite stories that I've ever written. But man, that interview was off the rails for a long time before.
That's amazing. And what a way to pivot and be creative, where, you know, you're like, this is not going the way I want it to go. I got to come up with something. And you're able to think about that. I actually saw in the early 90s, I went to a Tyson heavyweight fight where he fought Razor Ruddock. And it was the most intense sporting event I've ever been to in my life.
It was awesome sitting with someone who is such a legend of my childhood. And I almost felt like a therapist, because we were working out, like, how did you get here? Like, what happens in your childhood for you to become the heavyweight boxing champion of the world? And what are the consequences of that life? And so he ended up just being a very beautiful person that I got to engage with. And I'm grateful for the time. And if you think about him and you think about his history, there's very few women who have interviewed him. And if there is a woman who has interviewed him, I think it's tough to say that anyone's gotten better responses than I have. So I'm thankful that he trusted me.
Yeah, it's such an iconic figure, good and bad, from my childhood, you know, growing up. But it makes me really happy to hear that he turned out to be a good person. I love that, because I'm actually a fan of Tyson and how he's made a comeback. Now, you were talking about stories, like there's no stories here. Another crossover between journalism and leadership, I think one of the most important skills possible is storytelling. Why is storytelling so important to you?
I think it's inherent to who I am, and like, not to get woo-woo or crazy, but I think we each have a gift bestowed on us. And looking at where I come from my family lines on both sides of the lines, storytelling is a critical aspect. So I'm half Samoan. My father's born in American Samoa. His father's from Western Samoa. And my great-grandfather was actually the lawyer for Robert Louis Stevenson, arguably one of the greatest storytellers of all time. And in the Samoan culture, oral storytelling is a very critical aspect of that. My whole life, I've seen the world through story. I come up with big stories. I have in my head tens of novels that I'm going to write. I have movie pilots and television pilots. So I think it's just a gift I've been given, and something that I really enjoy.
And stories are so important too in the business world too, because it helps connect advice or lessons, right? You could tell somebody, you know, as a leader, you got to do this, this, and this, but being able to connect that with a story, people understand better. So if our listeners are sitting out there and are like, okay, well, great. Alicia, I mean, she's a natural born storyteller. She's, you know, that's not me. Do you have any tips for our listeners on how they can become better storytellers?
I think the best way to become better at anything is to watch or study others who do it. Now, obviously, I could watch Steph Curry's masterclass on becoming a three-point shooter, which is something that actually exists. I more than likely am not going to become of the caliber of Steph Curry, but I can learn the tactics that he utilizes to do what he does. So I think one of the best ways to become anything in this world, whether it's a nuclear physicist, a three-point shooter, or a storyteller, is to find someone who's doing it that you like and you believe has skills that you want to emulate. So there's this book called Steal Like an Artist. And if you study art and the history of art, none of it's new, right? Even the most mind-blowing designs, we'll take the Guernica, for instance. You know, Picasso's iterating on past artists' work to build this bold, massive design. And so that's something that you can do in your own life, is create your own course of study and create your own mentors and teachers, whether those people know it or not. The beauty of the internet is so much knowledge is accessible to us via social media. People are constantly sharing what they're doing and how they're doing. And so, you know, maybe it's stalking in a sense, but like, stalk or follow the people that you admire and watch their processes and consider how you can apply it to your own life.
Steal Like an Artist is one of my favorite books.
I love that book.
And for our listeners out there, you could literally read it in a couple hours. And I think that's so important in all areas of life, that you don't need, Alicia, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. Everything's pretty much been done already. So pick and choose and learn, you know, what works for you, and put it together and make it your own in your own way. And like what you were saying, hey, find somebody who thinks a great storyteller. Well, learn from them, but find three other people who maybe do it differently as well.
Kind of combine
that. And so I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, I love the old story about Burger King and McDonald's. They said, are you familiar with that story?
I don't know.
Okay, so what happened was, everybody would say, why is Burger King always opening up next door to McDonald's all the time? Doesn't make sense. And Burger King's like, hey, McDonald's spent all the money on the data on the best locations. Why don't we just piggyback off that?
Smart. You know? Smart.
So, yeah, smart. So Steal Like an Artist, I think, is super important. And storytelling is, you know, it's so important. So that's great advice. Now, moving over to your media company, Rolling with Sports. Can you share a little bit with the audience of what the vision is for that?
Yeah, so I actually founded Ruling Sports in 2011 as a sports law blog, which launched my media career. And at the time, I was trying to pivot from corporate law into sport law. And so I needed to let the world know, hey, I'm here and I actually know about sport law. I didn't go into that with the mindset of I'm going to become a sport journalist and I'm going to go off on this 10-year journey writing for outlets like Forbes, The Washington Post, and The Athletic. But that's what happened is I launched the blog and within one day, I booked my first radio show. Within 3 months, I had the same broadcasting agent as Andrews was using at the time. 9 months in, I got a cold email from an editor at Forbes saying, hey, Alicia, do you want to come write for us? So it was a wonderful journey, and I was credentialed for some of the biggest events in the world, and I'm very proud of the 300-plus bylines that I developed. But in 2019, I did a study on the lack of female entrepreneurship in the screen industry, why there's so few women who have funded production companies. And it was like looking in a mirror because I realized the mistake that I made in 2011. The mistake that I made in 2011 is I thought of myself as a blogger. I didn't think of myself as an entrepreneur or a founder. And so I went back and I righted my wrong and I redeveloped the website. In the time since, the world of sport business coverage had drastically shifted. My former students at the University of Miami, who I'm so proud of, Adam White and Russ Wilde, founded something called Front Office Sports, which is covering sport business. You have Sports Business Journal, Sportico, Kevin Durant's Boardroom. So it was a saturated market. So I had to figure out how I was going to fit into it. And so our tagline is giving athletes a playbook for life beyond the game. So many athletes are consistently A, transitioning through sport, or B, working to understand how they can use sport as a tool to elevate their life in other areas, such as founding their own businesses, launching nonprofits, investing wisely, etc. We're an ecosystem that addresses all of those issues. So it's been a lot of fun. We've got a lot of room to grow. We're a nascent company at this stage, but we have a weekly podcast, a weekly newsletter, and we're building out our editorial teams and content. And we just hope to be the one-stop resource for athletes when they're looking to figure out, A, how to use their sport-related skills elsewhere, or B, use sport as a tool to grow their life, that they come to us.
No, that's fantastic. And I assume that these are your target audience isn't LeBron James and Steph Curry and Caitlin Clark, right? It's probably the lower level athletes who need a little bit more help.
Listen, like I would be absolutely delighted begin consuming the content. So it's content for everyone, but those athletes are the inspiration. I've gotten close with Troy Polamalu, and I've seen how he's built his life and other athletes as well. Not every athlete has this full ecosystem around them like LeBron does, for instance, with Rich Paul and the brilliance that Rich Paul has built at Clutch, where you have the world's best experts building your nonprofit, building your businesses, building your production company. I want to take those lessons and dispel them down and make them accessible, to your point, to the athletes who don't have that ecosystem around them. So you're exactly right. What we're doing is we're taking the playbooks of the world's biggest athletes and we're making them accessible for everyone, athlete or not. And that's something that I really love, is our listenership and our viewership also includes people who are desiring to become leaders, pursue entrepreneurship, because sport is a universal playbook.
No, that's true. There's so much you could learn from sport, and there's so many things. There's so many parallels between sports, the business world, the nonprofit world, everything. And where do your clients start? Is it when their career's over with, or is it different now because NIL? And for our listeners out there who aren't familiar with the NIL, I wish they had it around when I was playing. I'd probably make 5-10 grand a year, which is better than nothing. You know, but people are making millions, but it's name, image, likeness. So are you getting athletes who are starting as early as high school to help them going as far as Ruling Sports, or is it once they're finished with their career?
Sure. So on Ruling Sports, we create content that is digestible by high school athletes. We actually recently had a high school female soccer star who's the captain of the U16 United States national team, Scotty Antonucci, on the podcast to discuss how she is approaching NIL, and she's crushing it. So that's definitely a name to follow. In my legal practice, so I'm still a practicing attorney. I have a sports law book of business. I've begun representing college athletes who I'm not an agent. I'm their lawyer. So the agent goes and sources the deal. I review the contract to make sure it's sound. But yes, my client representation list these days spans college athletes, current professional athletes, former professional athletes, and beyond.
And can you give me an example of, like, in what ways do you help them? I mean, is it like connecting them to getting jobs? Is it reinvesting their money, all the above? Or what, like, give me a couple examples.
So in my legal practice, I mostly help athletes with contractual work. So in the NIL space, a college athlete or their agent goes and gets an endorsement deal. They, you know, structure how that deal is going to operate. I then draft the contract or negotiate the contract or review the contract. I kind of think of myself as a life cycle attorney. And what I mean by that is for the clients that I'm beginning to work with at a very young age, I will help with business formation, for instance. So if you're doing a high level of endorsement deals, you really need some corporate structure to run those deals through. So I form the corporate structure. Depending upon the size and scale of the athlete and their business, we might register some trademarks. Then as the athlete's life begins moving forward, we do services such as estate planning. So it's a wide range of services where the whole point of my legal practice is to ideally follow the athlete from the draft to the end of their life and to be of service to them throughout that existence.
And so that's on the legal side. What about on the ruling sports side as far as helping their skills transition and things like that?
So Ruling Sports doesn't provide services. It's okay. A media content company where we definitely provide content in all of those areas. So strategies to adjust your mindset post-play, how to best protect yourself legally in an NIL deal. So we provide content around all of those areas.
Oh, I got it. That's super important. I ask a lot of questions because there's a lot of ex-athletes that
that's awesome.
Listen to our show, or at least I hope they say they do. All my buddies, at least they say they do, right?
Well, I hope they follow along. I think there's some good stuff in our podcast. It's a lot of mindset tips, business tips, branding tips and strategies, and similar on our web platform.
And one thing that's really important to me, now that I'm the father of a six-year-old girl who has shown interest in sports, and you know she's got a big soccer match coming up, is can you share a little bit with our audience about what's the landscape look like right now for women in sports?
People say that women in sports are having a moment, but truth be told, the moment's been building for 50 years. A lot of my research looks at women in leadership and women in entrepreneurship. And frankly, historically, proper investiture hasn't been put into those spaces. So with women's sports, like obviously Caitlin Clark is a generational talent. You can kind of compare her to Larry Bird and the movement that came to the NBA by virtue of him being drafted. But that's unfair. That doesn't paint the whole picture because there's so many incredible athletes who came before Caitlin Clark who paved the road. What's different now is the decision makers in our top media companies have finally realized the value proposition of A, women, and B, women's sports. Data show that 85% of household purchasing decisions are made by women. And so the fact that business and corporate America hasn't figured out how to optimally market to women means that we're leaving dollars on the table. So leaders are finally awakening to this realization, and they're starting to put greater emphasis, money, and focus on women and, in turn, women's sports. So we're only going to continue seeing it grow. And the beautiful thing is it's going to be beyond our, quote, traditional sports in America. So certainly the WNBA has seen tremendous growth, both in its broadcast contracts. We have expansion teams coming into the league. But we're seeing this growth span other sports. So a sport that I'm really excited to watch rise is women's volleyball. That the number of women's volleyball professional leagues that are emerging is fantastic just to create more opportunity.
And that's a fun sport to watch.
So fun. So fun.
I thought you were going to say pickleball now, because you told me off screen that you're a big pickleball player.
Well, pickleball is having a moment too for both genders, and you know, racket sports in general, thanks to the pandemic. Padel, or paddle as it's said in Europe, is definitely something to watch in the U.S.
So what are you hoping to see have changed in women's sports, let's say, in 3 to 5 years?
Where we don't have to call it women's sports and men's sports anymore. It's just the sport industry, and everyone gets the investiture that they deserve, and the opportunities are optimized, where your daughter 15 years from now can be confident that if her athletic prowess grows, that there's a relevant opportunity that will meet her, that's going to pay her appropriately, that's going to treat her appropriately, put her on the right aircraft, give her the appropriate training, nutrition, et cetera, that her male counterparts receive. So, you know, my hope, of course, is for full equity. It's going to take longer than we all want to get there, but I think serious progress is being made. And frankly, that progress, whether you like it or not, is rooted in capitalism, because the decision makers have recognized that they're sitting on this behemoth of financial opportunity.
Yeah, it's a missed opportunity, you know, that they could tap into. And I know you said it's been going on for 50 years, but I do believe, and I have seen, and maybe I'm paying more attention because I have a daughter, it seems like it is getting much more attention, and you're seeing all these women out there, and the great coaches, like the woman from Stanford, the basketball coach, and all of that. So I'm glad to see that that's bubbling up and evening out with the man. I think it's really important.
It's absolutely important. And really what shifted it is the democratization of media, because what's changed isn't just a player like Caitlin Clark entering the scene, but it's the decision makers who primarily are Caucasian males inside of your broadcast studios. They weren't green lighting these games to be broadcast on TV. Then, because of social media, the power of the media is put in individuals' hands, and women have capitalized on that, building massive followings. And those massive followings that they've built resultantly demanded greater access to watch the sport. So, you know, it's kind of a trickle-down effect where if you give women tools, the women are going to use the tools, and then later the marketplace will recognize the value that had been there all along.
Yeah, that's what needs to happen, and it will, I believe. And, you know, you spend a lot of your time and passion is around underdogs, athletes, women, minorities. To kind of flip the switch a little bit, I mean, you told me a heartwarming or a great story before we came on air, where LeBron, you had a great LeBron story. Can you share that story?
Yeah, I love LeBron, and I will like go to task with anyone who speaks poorly about this man. So I covered the Miami Heat for 4 seasons. I was writing for Forbes at the time. LeBron was a member of that team for 3 of the 4 years. And so what you would encounter is just cram-packed locker rooms, especially when the team was competing in the finals. And traditionally, at that point in time, I was either the only woman or one of a few women in the locker room. And you know, this next part, I think, plays both to men and women. But oftentimes, when you're in a locker room, especially a cramped locker room, the camera person needs to get their shot. Like, their one job is to get the shot. And so I had gotten to LeBron's locker pretty quickly. So I was basically standing right in front of LeBron. Cameraman comes in, I'm in the way of his shot, so he physically moves me out of his shot. LeBron sees, kind of shoots him a look like, what are you doing, man? You can't do that to people. It says, you can apologize. And yeah, the guy was like, not very happy that he A, got called on the carpet, and B, had to apologize to me. So I love LeBron. I've seen his character play out. And it's sad how politicized sport has gotten. But when you look at what this man has done, and
incredible,
it's incredible. Yeah. It's absolutely incredible. So LeBron for life.
Well, that makes me a LeBron fan now, because I was never a LeBron hater, but I was just like, okay, this guy's great, whatever, you know, on the court. I didn't know anything about him, you know, King LeBron. I was like, whatever. But hearing a story like that, I love that kind of stuff. You know, I love that an athlete like that, instead of brushing aside and forgetting about it, stood up for you and put this man or whoever it was in their place. I think that's an incredible
story. He didn't
story.
Have to do that.
Like, he didn't have to do it, but he did. You know,
he could pretend like he didn't see and just like dust it off, right? And that's what most people would have done. And, you know, as a journalist, I was annoyed, like, don't put your hands on me. And I got here first. Like, maybe you should have gotten here first. But it's something that I encounter with relative frequency that it wasn't surprising.
That was one of the things I wanted to ask. I mean, it's got to be tough to be a woman journalist in sports, you know, at least in the past, right? Women on the sidelines covering football games, this and that. Is it still that way? Or do you think it's getting a lot more accepted and just second nature? And like you said, just like evened out now, it's just that's how it is.
I don't want to speak for all women. I can only speak to my lived experience. And by and large, my experience has been very positive. I'm lucky that early in my career, a lot of men came alongside me in allyship and supported what I was doing. That's not to say that I haven't encountered some not so great or unfortunate situations ratcheting up to the level of like sexual harassment and, you know, depending upon how you define it, maybe even sexual assault in some instances. So it's hard to completely eradicate bias in anything. And the truth of the matter is, being a female reporter in a male-dominated space is always going to be different because of that inherent bias that exists. So I think it's positive that we're seeing more women in media, but if you look at the rate of female editors and women in decision-making power or people of diverse backgrounds in those positions, there's still significant gains to be made. And until that happens, I think we'll continue facing inequities.
No, I agree with you. And I feel like whether it's in the business world or in the sports world, diversity of all types, the more you add, the different perspectives you get, and different outlooks you get, and it's kind of cooler, you know, it's kind of cooler and you know, more interesting to hear different sides of stories and everything.
Well, especially with storytelling, right? Because
absolutely,
your lived experiences, whether you want them to or not, they're going to inform your story. And when you have when you have editorial rooms where you look around the room and everyone looks the same, A, but then B, they're covering people who don't look like them and don't have the same lived experiences, that really presents a problem for how the story is told. And so I think we're seeing those walls be broken down in journalism, thanks again to the democratization of media, where now anyone can become a journalist and anyone can pop up a media company. And if they're talented and if they can tell a story effectively, they'll be granted access. And thankfully so, because now we're seeing broader narratives of athletes and sport, and the old tropes are being shot down and slowly dying away, which is good.
And I like what you said, you know, if you have, you know, 45-year-old white guys covering a particular sport where the athletes look much different, you know, the perspective can be much different, totally off, or you're just not getting, I guess what I'm trying to say, you're just not getting the full picture a lot of times.
Right. Absolutely.
So we're coming up on time, but I don't want to let you off the hook without letting you share one cool story about, I mean, NBA Finals, Super Bowl, World Cup, all that kind of stuff. Can you share with us one fun story?
Something cool that I had the chance to do is in 2015 and 2016, I was credentialed for the Bundesliga Super Cup. So I got to fly. I was living in Miami at the time. I got to fly to Germany and, you know, cover teams like Bayern Munich and Dortmund, which you can see on the scarf behind me. And, you know, that was a decade ago. And so much has changed globally in that decade. So this was pre-COVID. It was before the rise of a lot of the technology that we're seeing in this nation. And it was a global event where, in one instance, I was the only woman on the press tour amongst 40 global journalists. So it was myself and 39 men from around the world. And the ability to sit at the table and break bread with these people who were from Taiwan and China and Brazil, and I was from the United States and the Netherlands and Kenya and Uganda, and be united via the beautiful game of football, or here in America, soccer, and to hear about what was going on in their nations and what was going on in their life and how sport was perceived there and how women were perceived there and what they thought of America and our politics was a moment in my life that I know won't happen twice. And so I'm humbled by the opportunity and so grateful that for a moment in time, I got to be with all those people.
I hope you're proud of yourself. That's incredible. There's 40 people at the table from all over the world, and 39 men and you got to be at the table with all of them. So
kind of wild.
It's kind of wild, and you're humble about it, but I mean, I hope you're really proud of yourself. So Alicia, today we talked about everything. I mean, we talked about the number one of the key skills out there, listening, super important, storytelling. Talk about helping athletes after they get out of school, right? Or after their sports careers ended. Women in sports and where that's going. So much, you know, you've been involved so much. And also kind of getting out of your comfort zone and trying things, which I think is, whether it has anything to do with sports or not. Before we go, do you have any other pieces of advice you want to leave our audience with?
To that end, the only way you fail in life, there's two ways that you fail in life. One, you don't try. Whatever it is that you're dreaming about, whatever it is that you want to do, it could be big, it could be, quote, small. I don't think anything's small in life. It could be you want to get married, you want to become a homeowner, you want to have a child, you want to create a dog rescue, you want to create the next big media company, whatever it is in life, you at least have to try. You at least have to try to get there, because the only way you fail, A, is if you don't put one foot in front of the other, one tactic in front of the next to get towards where you want to go. And B, the other way you fail in life is if you quit. So often, success is not overnight. Success is built over years, decades, hard moments, small wins. The only way you don't get to the proverbial top is if you stop. And that's hard, especially as an entrepreneur, because you're going to slug through the mud, and you're going to see other people get, quote, quick wins or investiture that you know that you actually really need and may be able to do better with. The only way you fail is if you don't start or you quit. So whatever it is you want in life, be sure that every single day you're doing something at least iteratively or smallly to get to where you ultimately want to be.
That's so true. So listeners, just to recap that, two ways to fail. You don't try or you quit. I had a great guest on the show named Dan Turner. He said the same thing. Failure, it's only failure if you quit.
Yeah.
You know, so you just keep going. The other thing I like what you said about that too in there was go for small wins. You're not going to go from A to Z. You know, in football, there's not very many Hail Marys. There's a lot moving the ball down the field. And so celebrate those wins. It's so important. And don't worry about comparing yourself to others. Just do your own thing and give yourself a pat on the back, I like to say, because Alicia, there's so many people out there who don't try. They don't try, and they don't know what they're missing out. So I think all this...
They're either scared or comfortable. You know, my one thing you asked what I do with my clients, and I mentioned like the life cycle representation. Part of that process involves asking them, what's your legacy? When someone is standing at your funeral or your memorial or whatever we're doing to recognize that you lived on this planet at one point, what do you want people to say? And something that you have to do today is you have to begin taking actions and make decisions in alignment with what you want your ultimate story to be. And that's how you live a successful life and a life with no regrets.
I'm just kind of curious. Do you get like a common answer that when you ask that question, what people want their legacy to be? And does it change from when you first ask them to after you worked with them for a while?
There's no common answer other than oftentimes, whoa, that's a big question and I haven't thought about it, but I'm so thankful that you asked. Let me go back and sit and think about it. And the responses thereafter are so wide ranging, and it's inspiring for me because oftentimes what it precipitates is the person saying, here's this big thing that's been festering in my mind for a while. Ah, that's my life's purpose. Let's go do it.
It's a much better legacy than Bob here didn't try this, didn't go for this, never attempted that, right? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, similar to something you said a few minutes ago, everyone always says comparison is the thief of joy. And that's something I've learned the hard way over the last 2 years. I've climbed out of the mud in the last 2 years, especially as I approached 40, because I looked at my life and it didn't look like 99% of the lives of people around me. There's things I thought I should have or should have done that I hadn't at that point. And so I started comparing myself and taking away from the value in my own life by saying, oh, well, my life doesn't have that, so it's not as good. You have to live your life in a vacuum where as long as you know that you're fulfilling what you at your truest self know is your purpose, then you're fine. And you can't take your existence and impute it or compare it to someone else's, because that will cause a lot of pain. Your wins aren't someone else's wins. Their wins aren't yours. We're all uniquely made.
First, I want to say thank you for being so vulnerable and saying that, you know, and from somebody on the outside, I think you have an incredible life. You know, I mean, I barely know you, but I mean, as far as what you've accomplished and all this that you've done, and yeah, you're 40, like you said, you don't have kids. So what? You're doing things. Look, I'm 52. You know, I mean, but you can't compare yourself to others. And, you know, the other thing, last thing I want to say about all that too, is a lot of times those people are miserable anyways, and in a different way, or maybe they're not miserable, but
yeah.
But sometimes you make people up to be too much for what you think they are. And at the end of the day, we shouldn't be, especially in America, we shouldn't put ourselves into the box like this is what you're supposed to be. You're supposed to have 2.5 kids and supposed to live here and supposed to do that. So I think, you know, we should all be proud and happy with some of the accomplishments we have and continue to get out of our comfort zone. I mean, you've done an incredible amount of stuff. So I'm glad that you thought about that over the last couple of years and seems like you're at a good place with it.
Totally, totally. And, you know, to that same level, like on the same vein, just as you can't compare yourself, you can't be afraid of other people judging you. Like once you know what it is you're doing, you just have to put yourself out there like a ballerina on a stage or someone on a flying trapeze, and you can't be afraid to be embarrassed or, you know, for people to laugh at you or people to say like, what is she doing? Like, who does she think she is? You have to tune out everything and just have laser focus on where you're going.
And one thing I'd want to add on that is that sometimes we think we're too important anyways, right? So, and what I mean by that is, let's say somebody laughs at us or we think it's embarrassing. I've been there plenty of times where I didn't want to get laughed at or I didn't try something because I was being embarrassed. But then I'm like, don't give yourself so much credit. Somebody might laugh at you for 30 seconds and then they forget all about it because they have their own lives to deal
totally.
With. Right?
Totally.
And so, and the last thing I'd say about that is too, I think it's important to be, you know, supportive of other people's successes. So maybe you have a tiny bit of envious about them or whatever, but instead of wishing somebody to do poorly, just be happy for what they're doing. Great. Hey, great. I'm glad you got that job. I'm glad you got that, you know, new car or new house. And then just go back to focusing on living in the vacuum, like you said, and making your life better.
I've achieved the greatest wins in my life at points. Like I'm not a jealous person and I typically don't compare myself to other people. But I've seen the greatest momentum in my life when I'm the biggest cheerleader of others, when I'm asking people like, what is your dream? How can I help you? Here's something, let me help you. I am rooting you on. And when I fully believe that and want that in my heart, when I want goodness, and I'm heart-centered is when everything flows. It's weird how it works, but it's a beautiful thing.
It's kind of karma or whatever you really want to call it. Like if you genuinely care and want to help, A, you might learn something, and B, sometimes it just feels good to give and help, and a lot of times you'll get it in return.
Yeah.
Well, this has been awesome. How can our audience connect with you?
Yes. So rulingsports.com is the website, and it's the social media account handles too, and the podcast, which hopefully you listen to Damon's episode and maybe some others that relate to whatever's going on in your life.
Well, Alicia, it was wonderful to have you here today. And for our listeners out there, if you got value out of this episode, which I'm sure you did, why don't you go to whatever platform you're on and text it to one of your friends, somebody else who thinks that they want to learn at getting better, everything from listening, storytelling, getting out of their comfort zone, or maybe an ex-athlete who's could benefit from Ruling Sports. And definitely check out Alicia's podcast. It's awesome. I was fortunate enough to be a guest. So until next time, everybody, stay curious, keep learning, and have a great day. Thank you.